And we will call the meeting to order. Good afternoon. This meeting will be held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. Roll call, Mr. Smith, please.
Chair Sundin.
Here.
Vice Chair Vang.
Present.
Representative Anderson.
Anderson present.
Representative Burkle. Burkle. Present. Representative Eklund.
Present.
Representative Hansen R.
Hansen R. Present.
Representative Hansen J. Representative Cleavorn.
Present.
Representative Lippert.
Lippert present.
Representative Lewick. Representative Miller.
Present.
Representative Nelson.
Present.
Representative Thompson. We have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Well, it sounds like our ratings are going down. Anyway, okay, thank you very much. First up, we have the approval of the minutes of the 21st meeting of the Ag Committee. They're provided and for your examination. Vice Chair Vang, if you've reviewed the minutes, can I get a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move the adoption of the minutes for the meeting of March 24th, 2021.
Okay. Are there any questions or corrections from the committee? Seeing none, hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, say nay. Okay, that motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Today, we're going to begin to wrap up our work for the session with the Omnibus Finance Bill. I'd like to make a few comments before we get into the bill. First, thanks to all the members and staff who have invested in our work and as we work through this remote process. Although we tried to maintain as much of the normal process as possible, we acknowledge the remote process presented some challenges. So thanks to everyone for helping to make it work. This session, 70 bills were referred to the Ag Committee. We heard over half of them, 38 exactly, with the exception of three bills that were introduced late that reflected base funding requests already covered. All the bills members requested a hearing for were heard. The input of the members and those who offered written or oral testimony was extremely valuable. Many of the bills are incorporated in some way into the DE amendment. As important as the bills were, we also spent the time necessary to review the budget and functions of the agencies within our jurisdiction. Passing an informal budget is the fundamental role of a finance committee, so I appreciate the agency's work with us through this process. Clearly, as with many omnibus finance bills, it doesn't include everything folks may want, but my goal in drafting the DE was to have something that was balanced, address diverse perspectives, and help move ag in Minnesota forward in a strong manner. The DE was also crafted with an acknowledgement of the unique situation we're in with resources coming from the federal government in response to the pandemic, but still being weeks away from knowing the federal parameters for the use. We're hopeful that additional federal resources will be able to be used to meet a number of very important needs that were identified this session, including additional funding for Second Harvest Heartland and the Farm to Food Shelf program, livestock processing, emerging and beginning farmers and urban ag, farm to school program, farm advocates, and farm rural mental health. And we've conveyed those priorities to the administration. With that said, we need to meet the general fund target, and the funding decisions in the bill come with expectations that a high priority will be placed on these areas for federal funding. We will continue to monitor the situation, work with Governor Walz and Commissioner Peterson, and will continue to reevaluate funding sources as we move forward. I believe the package we'll hear about today, number one, honors the commitment to the basics of what needs to be done through the MDA, BAH, and RE. Number two, it invests in opportunities to develop new markets. Number three, it supports continuing efforts that help address climate change. Number four, it provides some additional tools to help meet challenges of the pandemic. And number five, looks to the future to ensure that we all have rich and growing diversity of farmers equipped to contribute to our communities and the economy. As noted on the committee posting, we will do a nonpartisan staff walkthrough of the proposed DEA amendment and the spreadsheets and hear public testimony. Deadline for amendments is 8:30 tomorrow. We will meet Friday from 8:30 till noon if needed to consider amendments and vote the bill out. With that, since we're just doing a walkthrough, I'll present from the chair. I will move House File 1524 to get the bill before us and defer to Mr. Sullivan to do the walkthrough of the DE amendment. With that, Mr. Sullivan, please proceed with the walkthrough of the DE2.
Chair and members, I'm Colby Sullivan with the House Research Department. I'll be walking through the DE2, which is labeled in the top right corner of the document H1524DE2. And a lot of the language you'll recognize from House File 1524 as introduced, which the committee walked through earlier this session. So I'll just focus my walkthrough in Article 1 on the new language that members may want to be aware of. And the first item that's new or different is on the bottom of page 2. The last two lines, 2.34 to 2.35. This is a change to the base or standard rider for the money that's provided to the Department of Agriculture to award compensation payments to crop farmers for damage to crops or fencing caused by elk. The bill as introduced included the standard $30,000 administrative allowance for the Department of Agriculture's expenses and the expenses of the department's approved agents who help facilitate this program. But the language you'll see starting on 2.34 and 2.35 reflects the language in Representative Burkle's House File 1059. And that language says that of the $30,000, the commissioner may use up to $10,000 for expense reimbursement. And then there's new language on 3.4 to 3.5 as well that says, as well as for costs associated with training the commissioner's approved agents. And then the second part of the $30,000, $20,000 on line 3.5 to 3.9 may be used to make grants to producers for measures that protect stored crops from elk damage. The next difference to bring to members' attention is at the bottom of page 3. It's the paragraph H, which starts on 3.31. The governor's proposal from the beginning of this session included establishing a climate smart farm endorsement for the agricultural water quality certification program. But in the House File 1524, as introduced, the rider for that request was left out of the bill. So the language on 3.31 and continuing on to 4.3 aligns with the governor's proposal to establish the Climate Smart Farm endorsement. Next change then is a ways down the bill. It's on page 6. Now we're into the ag marketing and development portion of the Department of Agriculture's budget. On 6.3 through 6.6, the new paragraph F, this is a $10,000 transfer each year from the general fund to the new emerging farmer account, which is established later in the bill. And it's to support the objectives of the emerging farmer working group. And this transfer was part of Representative Jessica Hansen's House File 1274 that members heard earlier this session. And then right below that on 6.7, paragraph G runs through 6.16. This is language that provides $150,000 each year to the Department of Agriculture to establish an emerging farmer office with a full-time emerging farmer outreach coordinator, and provides further that of the amount each year, $25,000 is for translation services. And this is language that members will remember from Representative Vang's House File 2298. Then right below that, on starting on 6.17, paragraph H, which runs through 6.21. Members will recall that the governor's supplemental budget request for agriculture, which came out after the February forecast, included $100,000 each year for farm safety grants and outreach. And so this new rider on 6.17 through 6.21 reflects the governor's supplemental request in this area. Then scrolling down to page 8, this is the rider language for the Agricultural Growth Research and Innovation Program, or AGRI, at the Department of Agriculture. The language is basically the same in most respects as the bill is introduced, except the allocations for farm to school, urban agriculture, and good food access are all increased on page 8. And you'll see those numbers on page 8.15, $800,000 each year for farm to school. And the bill has introduced, and in prior years, that allocation was not to exceed $400,000. So it's doubled in the DE, as are the appropriation for urban agriculture, which is on line 8.25. That's increased in the DE from the base of $300,000 each year to $600,000. And then on 8.29, the good food access allocation is at $600,000, and it was at $300,000 per year in the bill as introduced. So then moving down to page 9, the last two lines, 9.33, this is the rider for the AGRI program is very long. So now we're just getting to the tail end of the AGRI rider. And on 9.33, I just want to highlight the words up to before $1 million. This is the governor proposed in House Bill 1524 to increase the AGRI appropriation by $1 million in the first year and to dedicate that money for livestock processing facility grants. The language in the 9.33 provides the department flexibility to allocate up to $1 million, so potentially a lesser amount if that was the department's decision. Then move down to starting on page 10 is the final portion of the Department of Agriculture's budget, administration, and financial assistance. Much of this language is the same. I'll highlight on page 12, this is the appropriation language for the grants to Second Harvest Heartland for purchase of products, Minnesota-produced products for Minnesota producers and processors for distribution to those in need through food shelves and food banks. And the language, see, for example, on 12.23, the additional permission to use this money, Second Harvest Heartland, to purchase and distribute protein products. This was not in House File 1524 as introduced, but it was added by the legislature last year as part of a larger COVID-19 relief package. So the DE2 includes the updated language for this program. And it's also, I can find it, this language that's on page 12 was also in Representative Jessica Hansen's House File 790 this session. So then move down to the bottom of page 13 to highlight the first of a number of pass-through grants that were not in the bill as introduced. Many of them were, though, in the Department of Agriculture's supplemental budget request in March. And the first one is on page 13, starting on line 13.32, paragraph H, $150,000 each year for grants to the Center for Rural Policy and Development. And this was also in Representative Banks, House File 847. The next page, paragraph I, at the top of page 14, grants to the Northern Crops Institute. This was in the Governor's Supplemental and also in Representative Burkle's House File 2430. Paragraph J, starting on 14.5, new pass-through grants to the Minnesota Turf Seed Council. These were in the Governor's Supplemental as well as Representative Eklund's House File 1805. And then on 14.20 down to 14.31, these were all part of the Governor's Supplemental Budget Request. The first, paragraph K, is $1,000 each year for grants to the Minnesota State Poultry Association, $14.24, $17,000 each year for grants to the State Horticultural Society, and paragraph M, $18,000 each year for grants to the Minnesota Livestock Breeders Association. And at the bottom of page 14, this is also new language, paragraph N. Mr. Savory might talk about this a bit as he goes through the spreadsheet. It's sort of an interesting situation where in 2019, the state government committee funded Healthy Eating Here at Home program at the Minnesota Humanities Center, but provided that in fiscal years 22 and 23, funding for the program would be transferred to the Department of Agriculture. But the program itself, by law, is still administered by the Minnesota Humanities Center. So the language on 14.32, paragraph N, through 15.5 on the next page just transfers the money from the Department of Agriculture to the Humanities Center to administer that program. Then on 15.6, we're back to pass-through grants. These were not in the governor's budget proposal. Paragraph O on 15.6, $75,000 the first year to Greater Mankato Growth. This was Representative Lippert's House File 1631. And then paragraph P, starting on 15.11, grants to the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation. This was Representative Petersburg's House File 1830. Then scroll down towards the bottom of page 15. Get into the Board of Animal Health and the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute. On 15.25, you see just as a technical matter, there was a rider that was added in the DE2 to reflect the operating adjustment that the governor requested for the Board of Animal Health. The bill has introduced had language for operating adjustments for the Department of Agriculture, so this just inserts a comparable provision for the Board of Animal Health. And then under AURI, there's a rider that says there's an additional $150,000 each year, and that money is for a meat scientist. And that was Chair Sundin's House File 2037. Then scrolling down onto page 16, there were some technical changes in this cancellation language, but the effect is the same as proposed, which is to decrease the Department of Agriculture's fiscal year 2021 existing appropriations to reflect cost savings. And then section 6 is brand new, and that's on 16.15 through 16.23. This language, I understand, is in other bills, omnibus spending bills this session as well. And as the chair pointed out in the beginning of the meeting, the federal guidance on how the state may spend the American Rescue Plan money is not yet final or available. So what this language says is the Commissioner of Management and Budget once that guidance is available, would need to determine if any of the expenditures in this bill that are funded with state dollars are in fact eligible for the federal aid, and if so, to use the federal aid to fund those expenditures rather than state general fund money. That's the end of Article 1. Mr. Chair, I don't know if you want Mr. Savory to do the spreadsheet or if I should keep going at this point with Article 2. It's up to you.
Oh, please continue with Article 2.
Okay, so Article 2 is the statutory language or policy language for the bill. It starts on the bottom of page 16. And Section 1, publicity representatives, this is new language that members haven't seen before. And it was part of the Department of Agriculture's supplemental budget request. And what it does effectively is it adds the Department of Agriculture to a list of agencies that are allowed to pay the salary or expenses of a publicity representative. See that in general, agencies are prohibited from spending state money for this purpose, except for the named agencies, which would now include the Department of Ag. And moving down to page 17 and section 2, Emerging Farmer Working Group, and section 3, Emerging Farmer Account. These are from Representative Jessica Hansen's House File 1274. Section 4, which is on the bottom of page 17, This is from Representative Banks, House File 1687, as amended in the committee, which requires the Department of Agriculture to award grants to eligible farmers to start processing and marketing cooperatives. Then on the bottom of, page 18, Section 5, and then the following section, Section 6. These are from Chair Sundin's House File 1898, the Department of Agriculture's omnibus policy bill for this session, and have to do with good food access eligibility changes. The next section is on page 20, Section 7. This is new language that was requested in the governor's supplemental budget request. And this is a change to the Sustainable Agriculture Demonstration Grant Program. And if I remember correctly, the change item that the department submitted for this request said this change would basically align the statute with how the program is being administered currently. Under current law, you can see on 20.15, eligible grants are those that meet all three of the following criteria. But the change on 20.17 would say that eligible projects are those that meet one of the three criteria listed in law. Section 8, then, for the bottom of page 20, this is from House File 1524 as introduced, and it's the increase to pesticide gross sales fees. That section's pretty long, and it ends at the bottom of page 22. So we'll start on page 23 with Section 9. This is the beginning of a series of three sections from Representative Hansen's House File 766, as amended in committee. The first section, Section 9, requires warning labels or caution statements on corn or soybean seed treated with neonicotinoid pesticide. Section 10 prohibits certain uses of seed treated or coated with neonicotinoid pesticide. And Section 11 on the bottom of page 24 prohibits certain ways of disposing of the same treated seed. Then page 24, Section 12, and the following section, Section 13, these are the department's proposals. They were in House File 1524 as introduced to dedicate certain food handler license revenues. Section 14, which begins on page 25, and then through Section 17, these are changes to the cottage food license exemption that's currently in law. It's similar to Representative Vang's House File 1430 that the committee went through, but there are a few changes, so I'll just quickly walk through what's in Sections 14 through 17. Section 14 on line 25.10 would provide some flexibility to cottage food sellers. Right now, they have to put their address on the required label for their homemade products that they sell. 25.10 would give them the option of using their MDA registration number instead. 25.18 says that home-processed and canned pickles, vegetables, and fruits that are eligible to be sold under the cottage food license exemption may have a pH value of 4.6 or less, or now a water activity value of 0.85 or less. And then at the bottom of page 25, lines 25.28 to 25.29, provide flexibility for cottage food sellers to organize their cottage food business in any manner that's allowed under state law. So as a partnership, a corporation, a limited liability company, et cetera. And on 26, Section 15, this increases the cap on gross sales for the license exemption for cottage food sellers from 18,000 to 78,000 gross receipts per year. Section 16 concerns the Department of Agriculture's registration of cottage food sellers and basically establishes a time limit that the department must register an individual within 30 days after the individual submits a complete registration to the department. And says essentially that after 30 days, if the person hasn't heard back, it's assumed that their registration has been accepted and they're able to sell their cottage food products. 26.9 lowers the registration fee that cottage food sellers pay to the department from $50 to $25. And then lines 26.11 to 26.14 would require the department to inflation adjust every 5 years. Currently, there's a $5,000. If you sell less than $5,000 of cottage foods each year, you aren't required to pay the registration fee. And this language would basically require the department to adjust that threshold for inflation every 5 years. Section 17 on page 26 essentially standardizes the training requirements for all cottage food sellers. Currently, there are two tiers of training requirements based on sales. This language eliminates the second tier and so that the training requirements would be the same for everyone. And we're past the cottage food sections now and on to section 18 on a similar topic, but this is the wild game processor exemption. This was the chair's bill, House File 356, with one change. In the bill that members heard earlier this session, there was a $15,000 annual sales limit for this exemption. And on line 27.8, that's been increased in the DE to $20,000. I think I said $15,000. Yeah, it's been increased $5,000 to $20,000 in the DE. Section 19 on page 27 concerns the membership of the Board of Animal Health. And it's similar to two bills that the committee heard this year. The chair's House File 138 and Representative Rick Hansen's House File 1137. And Section 19 would add two new members to the Board of Animal Health, one of whom is a veterinarian. And of the three then total veterinarians on the board, at least one would have to be a small animal veterinarian. Then the second new member would have to be a person who is a member of a federally recognized tribe in Minnesota who has knowledge of animal health. And as in Representative Hansen's bill, the advice and consent of the Senate that's currently required for Board of Animal Health members would be removed. And the governor, rather than the board, would appoint the state veterinarian under this language. And then on page 28, there's an effective date for this section, recognizing that our general understanding is that the Board of Animal Health will meet later this month to appoint the state veterinarian or the executive director of the board for the next state fiscal year that begins on July 1st. So recognizing that, this language says that the governor's duty to appoint the executive director under this language does not start until 22 and the appointment of an executive director for state fiscal year 2023. And section 20 and 21, these are from Chair Sundin's omnibus policy bill, House File 1898, concern the biomass sourcing plans that are required under the advanced biofuel and renewable chemical payment incentive programs. Then on 29.25, this is the first of two sections from House File 1524 with no changes, the governor's proposal to establish a biofuels infrastructure financial assistance program at the Department of Ag and a corresponding advisory council to oversee the department's development and implementation of that program. Then on page 33, starting on 33.9, this is a series of new sections that members haven't seen before that coincide with the governor's supplemental budget request to modify the Rural Finance Authority's agroforestry loan program. If I remember correctly, the change item says that this program was established in 2000, but there have been no loans issued since then. Basically, the program has not been used in the meantime, in part because of how the language was drafted in 2000. So the sections 24 through 26 and the repealer section 33 are an attempt to align the statute with other Rural Finance Authority loan programs. So eliminating discussion of a fiscal agent and providing the ability for the RFA to partner with participating private lenders and to participate in loans to eligible producers. So those changes then go through the top of page 35. Then we change to another topic with section 27. This is the Farmer Lender Mediation Act. And this language is the same as members heard in Representative Lippert's House File 80 as amended. Extends the act by 5 years and increases the period of time that creditors are prohibited from enforcing debts against farmers in mediation by 30 days. So then the next section after farmer under mediation is section 32 on the bottom of page 38. This is Representative Thompson's House File 1543 regarding the pesticide applicator license exemption for those applying sanitizers or disinfectants in response to COVID-19. One difference on 39.4, you'll see that now there's a retroactive effective date because the existing exemption expired last week, April 1st of this year. And the repealer, again, has to do with the agroforestry loan program. And then the last portion is just technical. It establishes the title for the bill as amended. And with that, Mr. Chair, we're at the end of the DE2.
Thank you very much for the presentation, Mr. Sullivan, and thank you for your work throughout this session here. Mr. Savory, let's hear from you on the spreadsheets, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the tape, my name is Ken Savory, House Fiscal Staff. I'm going to share my screen to get the spreadsheet before the committee. Mr. Chair and members, before you is the spreadsheet to the DE2. This is the full-size spreadsheet with various columns. The columns I'll be speaking to today are columns G, H, I, J, and K. Those are all on the right-hand side. I'll start first just by going over the general fund spending summary, which can be found on lines 2 through 5. That is the general fund summary of the various departments and state agencies within the committee's jurisdiction. Line 3 is the Department of Agriculture. And in sum total for FY22 and 23, the DE appropriates $112,789,000 in fiscal year 22 and 23, which is a $5,083,000 increase above the base, or $5,083,000 increase above the base. Line 3 is the Department of Agriculture, which for the biennium will be appropriated $12,061,000, which is a $307,000 increase above the base. Line 5 is AURI, which will be appropriated to the DE, $8,086,000 or $300,000 above the FY22-23 base. Line 7 is the sum of those general fund appropriations. And then moving down a little bit more, line 10, as I'll discuss and Mr. Sullivan mentioned in the bill, due to some dedication and general fund revenue loss to various components of the bill, those general fund revenue losses are listed on line 10. When combined with the appropriations on line 11, as well with cancellations that Mr. Sullivan mentioned in the bill to the Department of Agriculture, those cancellations being $1,330,000 in column G in the DEFY21 change, the net general fund cost of the bill is $138,820,000, which is also the committee's target as assigned by the budget resolution. I'll skip down a little further to the protection services area under the Department of Agriculture. Line 20 starts the various riders, which Mr. Sullivan went over. I'll point out just a couple new riders that he mentioned, those riders being on line 25 and 26. These are the various allowances to the elk crop damage compensation appropriation. Line 25 being the investigating claims carve out, and then on line 26 being the producer grants allocation as well. I'll flip down to line 37 through 44, which are the change items for protection services. These are all general fund change items. I'll go over those quickly. Line 38 is a change item for the industrial hemp development program, a $50,000 increase to the base in FY22. Line 39 is a base increase for the capital equipment replacement program, which is $66,000 in each fiscal year, extending it in the base and extending into the tails. Line 40 is the meat inspection program. This is $110,000 of general fund increase in each fiscal year, extending into the base. Line 41 is an increased appropriation to the noxious weed and invasive plant program. That is $225,000 in each fiscal year. That also extends into the tails. Line 42, as Mr. Sullivan mentioned, is a new rider, which is the Climate Smart Farms Project. This is a $500,000 one-time appropriation to the program. Line 43 is the dedicated food licensing fees. This shows the reduced spending to the Department of Agriculture in this division because the general fund dollars will now be coming from the agricultural fund. And I'll go over the revenue change a little bit down the spreadsheet, but that is a permanent reduction to that particular program in FY22-23. And then also in FY24-25 into the tails. And finally, for protection services, line 44 is the operating adjustment. requested by the department, which is $274,000 in the first fiscal year, $550,000 in the second fiscal year, and then that $550,000 is carried forward into the tails each year going forward. I'll skip down a little bit to line 56, which are change items related to, which are non-general fund related change items. Line 57 is a federal match for the meat inspection program. The general fund appropriated $110,000 a year, and the federal match is also $110,000 per year. This is in addition to the base and then therefore into the tails. Line 58 is the increase to pesticide fees to fund the MDA's lab and urban programs. There'll be new spending starting in FY 2023 of $2.251 million, and an additional $2.251 million in each year thereafter into the tails, and that's from the agricultural fund. Line 59 is the dedicated food licensing fees. This is the new spending because it no longer occurs in the general fund, but it is now being dedicated into the ag fund. The $3.6 million each year matches the change in the general fund to the change to the ag fund. And that $3.6 million, again, line 59, occurs both in this biennium and then into the tails. Line 61 is Mr. Sullivan went through the cottage food law changes. Those cottage food law changes additionally have some more spending from the ag fund, which is $128,000 in the first year, $105,000 in the second year, and then additionally the $105,000 from ag fund spending also occurs in the tails. I will skip down a little bit more to the next division, which is promotion and marketing, and that begins on line 74. Line 77 through 87 are riders as they appear in the bill. I'll skip down a little bit more to line 91 through 97, which are the change items tracked on the spreadsheet. Line 91 is the Farm and Agricultural Mental Health Outreach Appropriation. This is a $50,000 appropriation in each year, but is one time. Line 92 is the Farm Transitions, which is $100,000 in the first year, $50,000 in the second year, and those are one-time appropriations. Line 93 is an appropriation for international trade of $100,000 only in the first year. As Mr. Sullivan mentioned, line 94, the Emerging Farmers Working Group, this is a transfer of $10,000 each fiscal year to that account in the Ag Fund. Line 95 is the Farm Outreach Position and Translation Services, which is $150,000 in each fiscal year. This is a new base and will also continue into the tails. Line 96 is the appropriation for farm safety grants. This is $100,000 each year, and these are one-time appropriations. And line 97 is the operating adjustment for the promotion and marketing division, which is $54,000 in the first year, $109,000 in the second year, and that continues into the tails. That concludes the change items for promotion and marketing. I'll scroll down a little bit more to the value-added products, agri and agreed section, which is starting on line 112. Line 115 through line 130 are appropriations to both agreed and agri. Line 123 notes that there's an additional agri spreadsheet that breaks down the various up to and allowed spending within the agri program. I'll go over that particular spreadsheet at the end of the presentation. On line 133 starts change items for this section or this division. Line 133 is the biofuels infrastructure program, which is a $2 million appropriation each fiscal year in the base and into the tails. Line 134 is the bioincentive payments program. This is an existing rider within Agri, and the $1 million increase in each fiscal year would increase that particular appropriation within Agri to $4 million each year. So $1 million increase, bringing the total to $4 million. And this extends also into FY 24 and 25. Line 136 denotes a slight reduction to the Agri program of $104,000 in the first year, $105,000 in the second year, and then 109 each year of the tails. And then line 137 notes an operating adjustment to this division of $15,000 in the first year, $29,000 in the second year, and that increase operating adjustment occurs in the tails as well. I'm going to stick down a little further to the next division, which is admin and financial assistance. There's quite a few riders in this section, and those start on line 150, and then continue on to line 168. I'll point out for the committee, as Mr. Sullivan mentioned, on line 161 is the new rider for the Healthy Eating Grant. And as Mr. Sullivan mentioned, there was legislation passed in the state government area in the 2019 budget bill that allocated to the base of the Minnesota Department of Agriculture the Healthy Eating Grant Program, which is $325,000 in each year. This program showed up in the general fund balance after the legislature concluded that session and is therefore appearing in this section of the DE2. I'll scroll down further to the change items for this particular division. They'll start on line 170 and then go all the way down to line 182. Line 171 is an increase to the Farm Advocates Program of $20,000 in each fiscal year. This is a permanent increase in the base and also extends into FY24 and 25. Line 172 is the Ag Best Management Practice Loan Program, which is $1 million appropriation each fiscal year. This is a one-time appropriation. And then on lines 174 through 180 are various pass-through grants that the department the agricultural bill has funded in the past but were made one time in the prior funding bill. These have returned in the DE2. The first one being on line 174, the Center for Rural Policy and Development, $300,000 for the biennium. Line 175, the Northern Crop Institute at $94,000 for the biennium. Line 176, the Minnesota Turf Seed Council, $150,000 for the biennium. Line 174, the Poultry Association at $2,000 for the biennium. Line 178, the Horticultural Society at $34,000 for the biennium. Line 179, the Livestock Breeders Association, which is $36,000 for the biennium. Line 180, only in the first year, an appropriation of $75,000 to Greater Mankato Growth or Green Seam. All those pass-through grants are one time. Line 181 is the reinsertion of a rider to the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation. The 2019 Ag Bill included funding for this particular pass-through grant, but the conference report that eventually passed the legislature and was signed by the governor failed to include the language appropriating this money specifically to the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation. This change on line 181 inserts the rider into this division, and is no cost to the general fund target because of that. Line 182 is the operating adjustment for this division. It's $222,000 in the first year, $286,000 in the second year, for a total of $508,000 in FY22-23. That $286,000 in the FY23 carries forward into FY24 and 25 into the tails. That concludes change items for the department, or for MDA. I'm going to advance the spreadsheet a little bit to cover the Board of Animal Health and AURI. The Board of Animal Health begins on line 227, and the riders for that particular section are lines 230 through 232. The only change item for the Board of Animal Health, as Mr. Sullivan pointed out, is on line 235 of the spreadsheet, which is $103,000 in the first year, $204,000 in the second year for an operating adjustment. That operating adjustment of $204,000 in fiscal 23 continues in fiscal year 24 and 25. Line 248 is AURI. It only has one rider listed on line 251 for a meat scientist, and that is the corresponding change item on line 255 and 256, which is the meat scientist at $150,000 per year. I'll skip down a little bit to go over some of the revenue changes and transfers. The revenue adjustments are seen on line 270 and 274. I've discussed these before, but these are various revenue adjustments that are coming in. For example, the on line 271 is the federal match for the meat inspection. Line 272, the increased revenue from the pesticide fees regarding the lab and urban programs. Line 23, this is the dedicated revenue from the food licensing fees. That shows on line 273 that flowing into the ag fund. And then additionally, the additional revenue from the cottage food law changes. Line 278 is the general fund revenue changes, which I spoke about earlier. Line 279, we talked about the dedicated food licensing fees. Those would no longer be going to the general fund. So you'll see a negative $3,600,000 on line 279 in the current biennium and then into the tails. And then additionally, Mr. Sullivan mentioned some changes to custom meat exemption. Those fees, that would be a general fund loss to the general fund. And that would be negative $7,000 in each fiscal year for that particular program. So line 281 is the total for those. So in total, in terms of general fund lost revenue for FY 22 and 23 is $7,214,000 in an identical amount in the tails. Line 283 and 287 are just transfers in and out between various funds. Line 284 is the transfer of the Ag Best Management Practices Loan Program, the $1 million a year appropriation that flows into the Special Revenue Fund. And then also on line 285 is the Emerging Farmers Working Group. This was the transfer from the General Fund appropriation to the Ag Fund. And Mr. Chair, that concludes the walkthrough of the spreadsheet.
That's terrific. Thank you very much for your time, Mr. Seamery. It's always good to be educated by you and others. So we can move on now to some testifiers. We have six people signed up to testify today. But first, I'd like to hear from Commissioner Peterson, maybe a little overview of what we've got going on here. Commissioner Peterson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and appreciate everybody's work on this. Again, my name is Tom Peterson. I serve as Commissioner of Agriculture for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And, you know, I really, really appreciate the work that's gone into this budget, Mr. Chairman and members and Nancy and the staff. You know, really, if you think about where we were a year ago today, April 7th, you know, we were in a really tough space as food and agriculture at this moment. You know, we were working on things like whether our farmers market should be open. We had empty shelves for food. We had we were about a week out from the Smithfield plant closing with sick workers. A lot of uncertainties. And, you know, I think our department and the resources that we have within the department helped us really to get through this. And so I really appreciate the work that's gone into this budget because I think it recognizes the work that our agency has done and will help us continue to move forward with as we come out of COVID. I appreciate that this budget supports a majority of Governor Walz and MDA's budget recommendations. You put a priority on meat processing grants through our AGRI account, and also we maintain our flexibility within AGRI. And that was really key this past year within COVID, where we were able to adapt and have programs like assistance for farmers markets or our e-commerce, which was very popular with farmers at direct market, that we were able to have some flexibility to do this. Another piece that I really appreciate that this budget has is not just the continued support for Agri is the adding the extra inspector too is really key, because if we add plants, we need an inspectors. And so, and that also leverages federal dollars as well. I also want to highlight things that I think you put in that I think are always really important, like farm safety grant program, something Representative Anderson has definitely been a champion on, and is so important for us. Emerging farmers being included in this is very important. This is work that the department started, again, before COVID, and it's continued to build, and I appreciate the work that Representative Bang has put into that and dug into, and that is going to pay dividends for the state of Minnesota. Also, including and helping looking at our long-term climate goals with the not just the Climate Smart Farms, but also our biofuels infrastructure program being included in this is a help to moving and addressing a lot of those needs, plus helping our farmers. I also want to pledge to you that we'll continue to work, and I appreciate the language that's included on the cottage food and deer processing issues, and we still will continue to tweak some of those as we get into conference committee, but I appreciate that we have moved as an agency on these issues, and we'll continue to look at it. Another important piece on this, too, is noxious weed control. I really want to highlight this work on issues such as Palmer amaranth with our crop farmers, where it's in counties such as Iowa, where they've had it in more than half of their counties. We've been able to keep it to about 30 counties and only have active cases in two counties right now. And we've been able to actually eradicate it. But it's because of the funding that this legislature and this committee has put into that. I also think the important pass-throughs for the Rural Policy Center, Northern Crops, Turf Grass Council, and Horticulture Society are as important as well. Another piece that I just want to mention, too, as well, is some flexibility that you have in here, too, and we'll be continuing to work on our American Rescue Plan dollars and also dollars that will flow to the state from our continuing resolution passed by Congress at the end of last year, which will be bringing dollars to our state for farmer mental health, for one piece that will help address issues. We are looking at placing an emphasis on meat processing and on hunger issues within those APR requests that we are working on as we speak. And keep in mind, you know, that the rules have not been written. There's a lot of unknowns, but we are very confident that those are two of the highlights issues that we'd really consider seeing. I also want to mention that our agency continues to do work on what was contained in Representative Hansen's House File 766 that has to do with treated seeds, and we are continuing to address that important issue as we look at pieces as we move forward. With that, Mr. Chair, we're glad to stand for any questions. And I do have the other commissioners here, too, as well today. And thank you for your work on this bill. And we look forward to continuing to work to get a bill that at the end of the day, we're able to get a great vote on and get through committees, and appreciate all the work. And I'll do some good work for the state.
Thank you, Commissioner Peterson. And a special thanks to your staff as well for helping us through this process. It's been a joy to work with. We've got a handful of people signed up to testify, and I would like to remind them we have about 2 minutes per person allocated, so please be clear with your points that you want to get across. We can entertain Lori Cox from Roots Return Heritage Farm. Please identify yourself and offer your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Sundin, Vice Chair Vang, and committee members. My name is Lori Cox. I'm the owner-operator of Roots Return Heritage Farm in Carver. We thank you for your work this session and for the opportunity to testify today. I'm also an advisory board member of MDA's Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification Program. Our small farm produces fruits, vegetables, and herbs without synthetic chemical use for the public. We utilize continual no-till cover crop rotations and organic methods for soil health, plant nutrients, and environment. This season, we lease our farm to four newer producers, expanding their markets, who are emerging farmers, as highlighted by MDA. widespread use of treated seed coatings and other systemic pesticides continue to run risk for farms like mine and the environment. Farms flourish throughout your districts when domestic and natural pollinators provide healthy crops for customers and Minnesota's economy. Distinct portions of the ag sector may deem this production a bit less important. This is untrue, and we need all of Minnesota agriculture to succeed. This can occur through beneficial precautions and notifications from soil to fork. MPCA continually maps degraded areas and tolls taken on communities throughout rural and urban areas alike. Over 20 years, NeoNICS repeatedly supply studies showing persistence in off-target ag fields, natural areas, wildlife, pollinators, plants, foods, water. We need action to improve per MDH, MPCA, and MDA. Please, I urge the committee to support this bill to require written warnings on neonic treated seed packaging, ban their use for food, oil, feed, and ethanol, and ban their disposal in manners inconsistent with product labeling. But to strongly enable these efforts, I urge the committee to please amend the bill to include rulemaking for safe and lawful disposal of unused seed, continue U of M research on pollinators with raised pesticide fees, raise the dicamba registration fee, and enact a chlorpyrifos ban. Thank you so much for putting your constituents and producers first before singular interests. Thank you.
Thank you, Lori Cox. Next up, we have Allison O'Toole from Second Harvest Heartland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good afternoon to you and the committee. My name is Allison O'Toole. I'm the CEO of Second Harvest Heartland. I'm here today really to thank this committee for their decision to support the Farm to Food Shelf program's base funding level of $1.65 million each year of the next biennium. And in particular, I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Jess Hansen for their for your support of this program. Additionally, we're grateful this committee chose to further the program's reach by including language allowing us to procure locally produced or processed protein. Produce, dairy, and protein are the most in-demand items at Minnesota food shelves, and Farm to Food Shelf ensures that Minnesota's Feeding America food banks can source these products from local growers and producers. The flexibility to source protein through this program is a step in the right direction. However, without additional dollars to support those purchases, the only way to take advantage of this new language is to reduce how much produce or milk we procure through Farm to Food Shelf, which doesn't solve for the increased demand our partners are seeing. Mr. Chair, we too remain hopeful that federal stimulus funding will become available in the coming months to support food banks' efforts to keep the 1 in 9 Minnesotans experiencing food insecurity fed. We appreciate you mentioning your support of this in your opening comments and to the Walz administration. So on behalf of Minnesota's Feeding America Food Banks, thank you to the entire committee for your support of our work, including your commitment to the Farm to Food Shelf program. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Next up, Sarah Foltz-Jordan from, she is the Senior Pollinator Conservation Specialist. Please identify yourself for the record and offer your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm Sarah Foltz-Jordan, pollinator conservationist with the Xerces Society. I'm also an advisor for the State Lawn to Lagoons program and a member of the Governor's Pollinator Protection Committee. In my role at Xerces, I work with farmers across the state, including fruit and vegetable, row crop, and livestock operations. As an organization working directly with farmers, we are well-versed in the importance of balancing pest management and wildlife conservation. North America's pollinators are facing steep declines. A quarter of our bumblebees and 17% of our butterflies are at risk of extinction. Just as one example, our monarch population has dropped by roughly 90% since the 1990s. Pollinators need both habitat and protection from pesticides. Habitat goals tend to be non-controversial, and it can be tempting to focus solely on this issue. But if habitat isn't protected from harmful pesticides, it is not truly supporting pollinator conservation. Article 2, sections 9 through 11 require a pollinator warning on neonic treated seed and limits use and disposal options. We support these actions. However, when this bill was moved to the omnibus bill, two important pieces were removed, and we asked them to be restored in an amendment. One, we need rulemaking to determine proper methods of disposal for excess seed. Current industry guidance includes a variety of problematic recommendations, including burying treated seed in non-crop areas such as wildlife areas and field borders, which are often used as pollinator habitat. We are already challenged to find places on farms that are protected from pesticide exposure, and disposing of pesticides in marginal areas spreads contamination and further limits habitat options. Clearly, simply prohibiting a few disposal methods doesn't ensure safe disposal, and rulemaking is required to address this issue. We also ask that the pesticide companies that create treated seeds be required to address disposal of excess seed. This burden shouldn't fall on farmers or seed dealers, and it shouldn't cost us the integrity of our soil, water, and air. Again, language about product stewardship was included in an earlier version of the bill, and we ask that it be reinstated in an amendment. Unfortunately, the impacts of pesticides can extend far beyond their use in fields with heavy costs to wildlife and humans. These bills offer small but critical steps forward, and we urge you to support them. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next up, we have Tim Rudnicki from the Biofuels Association. Mr. Rudnicki, identify yourself and offer your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Tim Rudnicki, and I represent the Minnesota Biofuels Association, a trade organization for ethanol producers in Minnesota. I'm here to say thank you and voice our strong support for DE2, starting at page 10, line 18, which is funding for biofuel infrastructure. We recognize there's a big need for assistance to help retailers so they can offer renewable fuel in Minnesota. But what we've done in the last few weeks is identified more than enough retailers who could oversubscribe the program right now with above ground equipment requirements. So there's still a bit more low-hanging fruit out there. Why does that matter? It's because we're talking about a homegrown renewable fuel. It's because we're talking about keeping more energy dollars in the state of Minnesota, and it's about providing Minnesotans with a better value fuel. And one thing that was raised earlier by the Commissioner of Agriculture, Tom Peterson, is that this is also about decarbonizing the transportation sector. So to tie it all together, this is a great start because it helps decarbonize the Minnesota transportation sector well within keeping of the Minnesota Department of Transportation report and analysis. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Rudnicki. Next up, we have Kevin George from the wild game processing industry. Mr. George, please identify yourself once again and offer your testimony.
My name is Kevin George, and I'm one of the garage guys and stuff, and I appreciate everybody that's been working on the bill to exempt the wild game guy from being with everybody else that's in the meat markets and stuff. But the only one concern I have is limiting us to the $20,000 cap. I just feel that in the future, as it continues to go on, to hit that cap isn't going to be that hard. And I would just like to see that being removed from the bill, but everything else is A-okay with me and stuff, and I appreciate everybody that worked on it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. George. Next up, we have Stu Lurie from the Farmers Union. Mr. Lurie, would you please identify yourself and offer your testimony?
Thank you, Chair Sundin and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Stu Lurie, and I'm the Government Relations Director for the Minnesota Farmers Union. And I'm here to say thank you and share our strong support for the package. To echo Commissioner Peterson, family farmers and our entire food and agriculture sector faced incredible challenges this past year, and we're happy to see this bill not only invest in helping our members and others take on those challenges, but also making sure that we're investing in a system going forward that's more distributed, resilient, and fair. So we submitted written comments, but I appreciate the opportunity, as time allows, Mr. Chairman, to highlight a few of our top priorities that we're excited to see reflected in the package. First and foremost, the investments in meat processing that are throughout this package, again, not only the $1 million in additional funding for the Agri program, but also that additional staff at MDA and the meat scientist at AURI, both of whom will be important technical experts helping new plants get off the ground and problem solving for existing plants as they work to serve our members. Second, want to share strong support for the mediation, farmer lender mediations provisions included in the package. You know, much like other parts of the economy, the effects on the pandemic were not experienced uniformly by producers. Some were hit very hard. And for many, that's coming on the heels of five really tough years. As many of you know and are familiar with these numbers, but as of the last ag census from 2012 to 2017, Minnesota lost 5,000 farms. The previous one, they lost more than 6,000. And so mediation isn't the only tool that can help keep farmers on the farm, but for those in crisis, it's really important. And we are excited to see this program reauthorized and strengthened going forward. Next, want to echo support for the investment in biofuels and building out that infrastructure across the state, not only shoring up an important market for our members, but also an important first step in meeting our climate goals, cleaning up our air, and lowering prices for consumers at the pump. Every gallon of biofuels that we put in our cars is a gallon of petroleum that is displaced, helping with that climate transition that we are all committed to. Relatedly, I want to express support for the Climate Smart Farms proposal put forward by the department. This is exciting for us because it's building on the Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification Program, a successful program that works for our members and is helping them invest in their operations. And finally, I want to share our strong support for the provisions in the bill that support new and emerging farmers accessing land, accessing department programs, all of which are important, not just for those farmers, but for the future of our ag system and our rural communities. So with that, thank you, Chair Sundin, Vice Chair Vang, Ranking Member Anderson, staff, Nancy and Colby. You've all been incredible this session, accessible, responsive, and constructive, none of which I take for granted given the challenges with remote work. So thank you. Happy to share our support and happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Lurie. To the members, are there any questions for these testifiers? We have a few minutes to cover any questions. Let's see your hands if so. Representative Anderson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, thanks to all for working on the bill, too. It's a comprehensive bill, a lot of pieces to it. And my first comment or question, Mr. Chair, would go to somebody from the department, Commissioner Peterson or Assistant Commissioner Vobel, if she is on the line as well. Appreciative of the $4 million for the E15 infrastructure program. We could use more funding, but at least this is a start. And my question or concern is, are we creating another layer of bureaucracy by doing a advisory committee on the biofuels infrastructure program? It was only a couple of years ago that we had a similar program. I think Commissioner Vabo was instrumental in rolling that one out. And could we use something like that again instead of recreating the wheel again and get this money out as quickly as possible as to some of the lower hanging fruit that was mentioned earlier that wouldn't require a large investment, maybe a dispensers, nozzles, things like that. What's the plan going forward is, I guess, my question about how we can get this money out to the retailers as quickly as possible, Mr. Chair.
Would Commissioner Vobel like to identify herself and respond to the question?
Hello, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you so much. Can you hear me okay?
Terrific. Thank you.
Okay, excellent. Thank you so much for the question, Representative Anderson. So, yes, I mean, I would say thank you. We have had a lot of success with grant programs, and I think the one you're referring to is our BIT program a few years ago. So I would say that because of the experience we've had, and I would say some lessons learned from that program, we would be able to get this money out pretty quickly and also be able to get some feedback from folks to make sure it rolls out successfully. But I think we're feeling good that we can get that money out quickly based on the experience we've had in the past.
a follow-up, Representative Anderson?
Yeah, just a quick follow-up, Commissioner Vobel. Thank you for the comments. What do you see ahead as far as getting some leverage with federal money? Is that too early to be counting on that, or can we combine the two and get a bigger package going here?
Commissioner Vobel.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson. You know, I don't have a definitive answer on the federal grants, but I'm feeling really good that we're going to have a chance to get some, you know, with Secretary Vilsack at the helm at the USDA and some really strong partners in the federal delegation. So hopefully there is going to be a chance, and certainly we will use those dollars to leverage additional federal funds.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Anderson, Commissioner Vobel. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and my question's for Commissioner Peterson. I was listening closely on the pesticide reform language and just wanted him to clarify if he supports the language in House File 766 that was included.
Commissioner Peterson, any comments?
Mr. Chairman, the department does support that language that is in the bill, and appreciate working on it. You know, as we go forward, we may have some minor pieces to it. You know, I'm looking at implementation dates or different things, but I think that we are supportive of it.
Follow up, Mr. Chair, please.
To help with, you know, we heard testimony here again on the impacts on pollinators and pesticides, and I know in the past there's been concern about lack of testing ability on neonicotinoids. If there is excess federal money, does the department have the ability to buy equipment for the laboratory? Is that an option, because you would be looking at health and safety issues? Have you put in a request for analysis equipment in the lab that would assist with neonicotinoids or some of the new classes of pesticides?
Commissioner Peterson, please.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hansen, I would actually like to ask Commissioner Place to maybe address that issue. That's okay.
Commissioner Place, please identify yourself and please respond.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Whitney Place. I serve as Assistant Commissioner of FDA. Representative Hansen, to your question, actually, we're emailing about this during the committee. We are looking at federal options through the ARP for some of this equipment. It doesn't look like it's fitting some of the criteria, but we'll keep trying for that. But I will say that it's getting to the point where we really do need to upgrade our existing lab equipment and purchase new equipment to be able to keep up with the different technologies that we need to test for. So this funding is really critical.
Thank you. Any further follow-up on that? Thank you. Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering if Mr. George is available for a question.
Is Mr. George still with us? Kevin George?
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. George, I appreciate your comments on the service you provide to us deer hunters in the state of Minnesota. My question, do you do your business in the area that is certainly currently the chronic wasting disease management area?
Mr. George? The area that I'm in does not have chronic wasting as of the moment and stuff, but the area I'm in is very proactive on it. They're trying to keep a lot of the deer in our county. And we have a transfer station that takes all the carcasses that I deal with. So if you have a deer from a chronic wasting zone, you cannot move it out of that county. So currently, no, there's no chronic wasting in my area.
Okay. Representative Eklund?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's all I needed to know.
Representative Vang, please. You're on mute.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just want to ask the department regarding funding, if they're looking at federal funding for ethanol subsidies or infrastructure.
Would you be more clear with that question? I didn't quite get it.
Because I hear a lot of references to federal funding, And so I wanted to know if they're also looking for federal funding for ethanol needs as well, or biofuels.
Okay. Commissioner Peterson?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Vang, yes, we are. And there's different places that we would be looking for that. One is the American Rescue Plan is a current place. There's also, as I said, other funding that passed at the end of the legislative last legislative session. Then there's also the new infrastructure program that President Biden rolled out. At the moment, doesn't have as much in it for biofuels, but I know our congressional delegation is looking at that too as well as a piece to build out in that too as well. So we are continuing to look, and I do really feel strong based on our past history that the dollars that are in this bill and in our budget will leverage federal dollars when it's available. And that has been successful in Minnesota and made us a leader in pumps that are available. So there are hopefully possibilities there too as well.
Representative Vang, anything further?
That is all. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for the testifiers? Okay. In addition to the testimony, I believe there's like 18 people or organizations that provided some written comments, so please examine those at your leisure. So I'm going to turn back to some of my opening comments here and just remind everybody, with the exception of three bills that were introduced late that reflected base funding requests, that were already covered. All bills members requested a hearing on were heard. And I really do appreciate the full participation of people on the committee. It's just so critical to get things done in a cooperative fashion, and I really appreciate the committee's work thus far. So I don't see any further questions. I look forward to continue working on this. With that, House File 1520.
Chair.
Excuse me. Oh, Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and I see we have a few minutes left, so I did have a couple other comments or questions.
Terrific.
The one piece, financial piece, that I think is difficult for me to go along with is the pesticide fee increase on the agricultural chemicals. Information I saw had that the ag side contributed 93% to that fund that goes to the pesticide collection fee, and to use that amount to partially fund urban education, I think it's not balanced. So I do have an issue with that particular fee increase. And the other question I would have for staff, looking back to the past couple of bienniums, I think it was mentioned by Mr. Savory that in the 2017 budget, $250,000 was allocated to each of the urban ag program and the good food access. In 2019, it was up to $300,000 each for those two programs. And the current bill has that doubling up to $600,000 each. I'd like to find out if all the past funding was used up. Back to 2019, $300,000 each. Any past history to see if the increase is warranted based on past usage and if the prior funding had been used by both of those programs, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Representative Anderson. I heard two questions in there, actually, fee structure and the financial questions there as well. So who would like to cover those from the department? Commissioner Peterson, please.
I'll maybe start, and then maybe Commissioner Place can fill in on the fees. And, you know, raising fees is tough. You know, it's something, as I said, that I'd be very difficult to address as well. And we do feel it's important. Again, this is a recommendation that comes out of the legislative audit report. It helps stabilize our funds. We looked at it on farmers, the co-ops are, it would pay the fee and everything, and it does get passed down to farmers. We understand that would be about 8 cents on a $20 purchase. And so, but it does help us provide some stability. It helps us answer things that have been in our legislative requests on pesticides. And Whitney or Commissioner Place, there are other things you'd like to add on that piece?
Commissioner Place, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just add that the education positions that we have in our change item total to $325,000 of the total request of $2.251 million per year. So the urban education portion is a small portion of our increased request.
Representative Anderson, please.
No, I appreciate the answers. And could anybody comment then on funding usage for urban ag and good food access? I'll ask like any of you.
I can take a start, and then Commissioner Vobel can add for that. You know, the one thing I just say on those, the increase especially, I don't know for sure on the good food access, but I will say on the urban agriculture grants, the demand for that has greatly increased in the last few years. One of the things I look at as Commissioner in Agri is, are there things or programs that are we getting a lot of requests for the dollars that we have? And in the past year, I think the last round, we had $1.8 million in requests for the about $300,000 we did for urban eggs. That is a tremendous increase that shows, especially I think a lot of that went with, COVID. COVID really drove a lot of that and everything. So I thought that was a really interesting and showed the request for that. The good food access too, I just want to also point out that, I always think that that is still a kind of growing issue. And that also this year we saw interest in that because really it helps support our grocery stores throughout rural Minnesota. I looked at, and, you know, not just rural Minnesota, but maybe also in St. Paul, you know, for example. And the need is there. We continue to adjust that, the different grant parts that we have in there. But I think that it really does show the need for those programs, especially I know the urban ag grants stood out to me, but I don't know if Commissioner Vobel wants to add to that as well.
Commissioner Vobel.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Yes, Mr. Anderson or Representative Anderson, Commissioner Peterson got it right on the head. So at least with this last round, we had a request for $1.7 million for the good food access. And so awarded what we could. But consistently over the last few years with urban ag and good food access, we've spent all of the dollars and have had requests for more than we were allocated.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, well, thank you. Any further questions, comments before we close? Okay, thanks for this discussion. Look forward to continuing working on the bill and, with that, 1524, is that the right number?
Yeah. Mr. Chair.
Oh, excuse me. John Thompson. John Thompson, if you have.
Chair, thank you so much. Real quick, because I came in on, I listened to Urban Ag, and I listened to us talk about Urban Ag. I wanted to just highlight that. I do really know the need for urban agriculture, urban farming, urban, because I live in urban Minnesota, right? Thing is, we put these words in that typically leaves Black people out of it. They leave the African-American community out of this urban agriculture money. We put words in like person of color. We put words in but minority. Right. We put those words in, but then the African-American community is left out of this money historically, left out of the grants. And so when the money does come out, who's overseeing where this money is going and auditing, how this money is being allocated? Because it seems to miss my community a lot. And I heard it says St. Paul, but where is St. Paul? I still haven't been able to find it.
Commissioner Peterson, could you enlighten us on some of the verbiage in the grants and how you deal with those situations?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Thompson. You know, I can share with you you know, after the committee, examples of where those grants went in St. Paul and throughout the, not just the Twin Cities urban area, but other parts of the state's urban areas. And it's been quite extensive as well. And so I think there's a lot of success stories there. And part of that may be on us, too, as we're communicating that to you. I'll also say, too, that we work very hard to have diversity in our grant committees that help select those grants, too, as well, especially, you know, in the last 2 years. I'm very proud of the work Commissioner Bailey has done to really broaden our reviewers for all of our grant programs as we are looking at that. We work closely with groups like MEDA or LEDC in the metropolitan areas on our last CARES Act that helped distribute money to farmers who may live in your district but may farm in Dakota County or Washington County. Right. So quite a bit of different piece there, but I will share that information with you. And then we are audited. We are subject to audit. We actually just commissioned a report that we'll share with the committee when it comes out that for the first time we're having an outside group look and do a deep dive into the AGRI program, and we'll share that with you.
Thank Is there a follow-up, Representative Thompson?
Thank you so much, Chair. I just wanted to just highlight that because I think that we can work together making Minnesota first and not worse when it comes to ending disparities here in this state. And so I thank you, Commissioner, and I thank you, Chair. And everybody in this body, by the way, our committee, thank you, guys.
Thank you, Representative Thompson. Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just going to ask the committee to really listen carefully for the words that I'm about to say. When we talk about agriculture, the idea that there is only Greater Minnesota agriculture is just not factual. Agriculture is a multifaceted, diverse, high-tech, innovative, important piece of our economy. So when I think about the constituents that I represent in Plymouth, sure, right? I want you to listen to these names, and I want you to think agriculture. Cargill, Land O'Lakes, General Mills, SunOpta, CHS. We've got Michaels in Minnetonka. This is major economic drivers, right? It is not just, and I know this is going to irritate some people, but it is not just getting biofuels and corn subsidies out to Greater Minnesota. Agriculture today is complicated. It's integrated. It's scientific. And we are ignoring the necessary innovations that need to occur in agriculture. I want us to think more broadly. It's huge for our state, and we need to get this right. So when we're talking about infrastructure and dollars for infrastructure, we better be thinking about the environment. We better be thinking about climate. We better be thinking about the resources that we need to keep our economic engine driving in this state. So, looking at this, I'm very concerned about some of the items in this budget. And I will have other conversations after this meeting is over. But we have to think broadly about agriculture. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cleburne. Any further comments? Again, thank you for the participation from all the committee members and the AG staff. It's just been a tremendous experience thus far. So with that, 1524 is laid over. Thank you. We're adjourned.